This is Parsha Melacha. I want to analyze one character who appears a lot in this week's Parsha, appears a lot in next week's Parsha also, is the character of Lot. I want to discuss Lot a little bit. Lot has a real up and down journey in these next two Parshios. Before I discuss what Lot actually does, and we know he plays a very heroic role in some areas, and he's a little bit of a Nebuch in other areas, we're going to try to analyze what Lot's up and downs were, what they were caused by, and try to take a Musar Haskel from them, how to make sure that we were able to take what Lot did well and do it ourselves, and what Lot didn't do well and make sure to avoid those pitfalls ourselves. Before we get to Lot, though, it's only natural to discuss a little bit of Lot's background. We know that Lot was born to a man by the name of Haran. Haran was Lot's father, and Haran met a most unfortunate end. He didn't live very long. He died before his time. And we're told, and the whole thing is not appearing in the Chumash at all. It's not in the Chumash. It's all in the Midrashim. We also have Ben Azil quotes the whole story in detail. That every Midrash, you all heard the story beforehand, is Avraham Avinu. I'll fast forward this part of the story. Avraham Avinu was taken by his father, by Terach, to Nimrod, who was like the chief idolater at the time. And Terach said about his son Avraham that this man has gone against the idol worship phenomenon. He broke the idols. He claimed that the bigger one broke it, etc., etc. Nimrod said, "Bow to my god of fire, I'll throw you into the fire. You can have your god stop it." I refuse. And he was thrown into the fire. As this is happening, Haran is watching by the side. And he realizes that who's the next one they're going to go to? They're going to ask him whether he wants to, you know, who he's like. Is he with Avram's god or is he with their god? So he decides a very logical thing. Well, it depends. Whoever wins, I'll be on their team. I'm a fair weather fan. I'll jump on the bandwagon. Sure enough, we know the story. Avram gets thrown in. And we also mentioned the shmooze. They turn to Haran next. They say, "Whose side are you on?" I want to pause there for a second. Imagine you're Nimrod. Here you are, throwing in your arch nemesis who's trying to defy you and knock your big idol-worshipping phenomenon to the ground. And you threw a guy just down into the fire. And the guy just walked out unscathed. Wouldn't you start to maybe second-guess yourself? Perhaps even go to Avraham and be like, "Okay, I'll follow what your god says." But instead, Nimrod is hard and is like, "And whose team are you on right now?" Let me see. Well, that guy just walked into a fire, and he looks pretty fine. I'm going to choose his team right now. It's an obvious choice. P.S. He walks in and he doesn't come out. As I also mentioned, you walk into a fire, usually what happens is you get burned. But I don't understand, forget Haran for a second, I don't understand Nimrod at all. What was Nimrod thinking? What was wrong with him at the time that he actually turned to Haran as if he was ready to throw him in and also show him what to do when he just got nearly lost? Like, Avraham just showed him that your god of fire means nothing. What was Nimrod's point? So I'm going to share with you a Rashi based on the matters at the beginning of Sefer Parshas Bereishis. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world, he goes and he says, "Na'ase Adam b'tzalminu kidmuseinu." What does the word "na'ase" mean? Say again. Let us make man. Rashi right there quotes the Medrash, jumps on that point and says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! Let us make man." That sounds awfully much like there's more than one god in the world. Why would you write that? So Rashi there quotes the Medrash that states, "We're trying to teach an important idea. You should be modest and humble, and even consult people who are lower than you, the Malachim, to maybe avoid jealousy issues or things like that and that like. And therefore, it's a nice. I'm teaching you a nice midah." The midah is consult with others, even though you don't really need them at all. Consult with them. It's nice to consult them. So I remember time in a Sefer, quotes, I forget who said it right now, but I know I saw it recently in a Sefer called Lekach Tov, which is a compilation of a lot of different Torah in the Parsha. He said, "It's a very nice lesson to learn, but I'm not sure the risk is worth the reward." It's a nice lesson. You should always speak to someone who's lower than you, get people's advice besides your own. Very nice. Is it worth losing a few Jews to monotheism? To learn a nice, cute lesson? Could we not have learned that lesson maybe somewhere else, less risky for us? That'd be a little wiser. Why am I setting this up for someone to read the Torah and see something that is so blatantly calling for polytheism? Let us make men. Let us make man. Because we want to learn a nice, sweet idea. Always consult someone else before you make a decision. Even if they're lower than you, it's nice for them, it's nice for you, good for Anivus, etc., etc. It sounds a little backwards. That's the question that he asked. And he gave the following shot. And this shot over here is one that is not only for that point in time, but it's for us as well. He says that a person will find doubt in God wherever he wants to find it. If you want to find a problem with God, you'll find a problem somewhere. You're looking for a problem. People ask all these questions. Is there a God? Is there not a God? How can you open up your eyes every morning, look at what happens in the world, and not see a creator to the world? It must be you're looking for a reason not to believe. So, says Chazal, I'm okay with you finding a reason over here, because if you don't find it here, you'll find it somewhere else. But Nimrod was all about someone who was looking to find an ability to avoid seeing God in the world. And therefore, something was so blatantly obvious to him, and yet he said, Howard, do you want to go in also? You know, Ibn Azil actually sells what Nimrod thought. He thought that Harun was an enchanter, he was some sort of a sorcerer, and he was able to chant and make the flames cool down so when Avram walked in, he wouldn't be affected by it. So he turns to Harun. That's what he thought. That's what he wanted to grab onto. Okay, let's see you go in there now. And he did. And it says in the Yonos Ibn Azil, a fire from Shemayim came down and consumed Harun's body. Consumed it completely. What you see from over here, though, is that people can believe whatever they want to believe. You can convince yourself of anything you want to convince yourself. Whatever it is that you want. And that's the greatest challenge that Harun was facing, and that Nimrod really was living by, is that a person can decide in any way he wants to, this is not real, that's not real, even though the argument is so overwhelming that it's true. And I'm sure you know people like that. Someone's dating a girl, and the girl is not so nice to him. And everyone says to him, like, tell what happened. Oh, no, that's not what she meant. That's not what happened. People can see anything they want to see in the world. But the problem is, when what you're trying to find is something that is an absence of God, so sometimes it's so blatant to you, but you have to figure out ways to avoid it. The mashal I saw in the paper called Das Torah by Ruchim Lavovitz, he says, it's like, imagine that you have a huge sunshine, a blaring sun. So it's, you know, you feel it's burning on your back. But all you need to do is put on a pair of sunglasses, and then you can look up the sun, and it's not blinding anymore. Or I just go stick a step over here to the right under a little tree, and I feel completely cool, completely calm now. I can deny now it's not so sunny outside. I can deny it. Now, there's always possibilities, opportunities to deny anything that you want to deny. But that's the Nimrod, that's the life that they were going from, Harun and Lot and Avram and Terach. That was the life they led. Even when something was so a big slap in their face, they were still able to deny God. That's where they came from. That's a little background about Lot. Now, Lot sounds like he was mamish, like a buddy of Avram. They were like two peas in a pod. Vayelech Avram, Vayelech he told Lot. Lot was with Avram completely. They were partners. As a matter of fact, we're told that when Avram and Sarah went down to Mitzrayim, Lot was with them. And Avram lied, and Lot didn't say anything about it. He was a big tzaddik. We'll see later on. We'll even discuss how he gets a lot of credit for that later on. Yet at some point in time later, Lot goes wrong. Lot was bad. What happens to Lot? How'd it go bad? But that was before. That was after he went bad. Avram says to him, "We can't be in the same town. That was the same town for us."
They're eating the.
So it was the cows. But I'll read the pasuk to you if I can. Look at the pasuk. It says over here. Wrote it down for myself. In Perek Yigimel, pasuk Aleph says the following thing. They just finished the whole story of Paro and Mitzrayim. Paro and his people send away Sarah and everyone else because they were afflicted because they took Sarah for Paro to be the wife. He didn't tell that she was his husband, that Avram's husband, and therefore they're afflicted. They sent everyone away, including Lot, everyone. Vayal Avram Mitzrayim, who v'ishto v'ezkol asher lo v'lot imo ha'negba. That Avram went from Mitzrayim, he, his wife, everything else that they had, as well as Lot. And Avram was very kaveh b'mignah. Avram had a lot of crop, a lot of flocks, a lot of money, kesef, zav. He had tons of stuff with him. He was very wealthy. And it's even told, two seconds later, in Pasuk, hey, v'gam l'lot, ha'olich es Avram, he was sonu bakar, v'olim, he's also very wealthy. I want to highlight to you a big difference between the way we describe Avram leaving Mitzrayim and Avram leaving and going to Canaan. The first Pasuk, in Pasuk hey, it says, v'yikach Avram et Sarah ishto, V'yas Lot ben Achiv, V'yas Kol Rechusham. You hear that order? Avram, Sarai, Lot, Kol Rechusham. Pasuk Yigimel, one more time, Paragraph, Pasuk Aleph. Avram went from Mitzrayim, who? Ishto, V'chol Asher Lo, as well as Lot. He lost a place in the hierarchy. He lost a step in the order. What changed from then to now? What changed was he left with wealth. He left with property. He became very rich. And all of a sudden, like we saw by Nimrod, when you have money, I'm not going to make a joke. When you have money, at that point in time, your priorities change a little bit. So much so that Avram said, we can't even live together anymore. I can't have myself living with you anymore. They became so obsessive with something so silly and foolish like money that he lost complete perspective. He went down on the list. And he ended up choosing a place to live in called Sodom, which everyone knew at the time were full of Ashim Ra'im. But he didn't care anymore. He gave it all up because he was obsessed with financial wealth, financial ability. This is probably, possibly, the greatest challenge that we live in today. Is possibly this. People are so obsessed, are so focused on money and getting things, that they will do anything that they can to get more money, not realizing who they hurt in the process even. And you look, just have to look at what's happened in the past year or two with Madoff. He doesn't care at all. He even said in his interview, he doesn't feel bad for the people that he hurt in the way, only the fact that his son committed suicide. That kills him. And that his wife can't speak to him anymore, and his children don't want to talk to him anymore. That kills him. But the people, he doesn't care. You know why? Because for money, it blinds everything. And yet we focus almost our entire careers, from the time we're younger even, idolizing. We even spoke today in Shir about how much money everyone's making. Everyone knows how much money these athletes are making. We spoke about it. It is something that is so on our minds. Our goals in life are almost solely focused not on professional success, but on success that breeds money with it. If you could be the top, I don't know, garbage man in your field, pulling in a nice five-figure sum, versus being the 1,000th best, I don't know, football player, and pulling in a six-figure sum. Everyone, of course, is a football player and make more money that way. To succeed in your area is not as important to us as to make money. That's exactly where Lot went off. Even though he was living with Avram Avinu, he was mamash a partner of Avram Avinu originally. Lot and Avram were buddies; they were partners in some way. And then you see over here that though you can hang out in the proximity, in the vicinity of an Avram Avinu, the moment that money is such a goal in your life, and all you care about is college, to get a good job, to make so much money—that's your plan in life—that all of a sudden will result in your priorities going out of whack. And we're promised that. We're promised that. Because you couldn't have a greater role model than Avram Avinu around you. You couldn't have one. And that role model was not enough to steer Lot and keep him clean. Because he got money and all of a sudden, like, everything changed. And he wasn't even matching up anymore to the rechush of Avram. And he couldn't be in the same town as Avram anymore. That's how bad he went. But Lot wasn't that bad. He was worth saving. We know that Avram Avinu, the davens for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should save the town. The towns of Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighboring five cities as well. In the end of the day, only Lot and his family were saved. I want to read to you the pasuk though, when it describes Lot being saved. It says in Perek Yutes, pasuk of Tes, "Vayhi b'shachis Elokim es arei kikar." When Hashem was destroying these cities, "Vayizkor Elokim es Avram." Hashem remembers Avram of Yinun. "Vayishalach es Lot mitoch hafecha." He takes Lot out of the hafecha. While he's taking the city and destroying it. The most fascinating thing I'm telling you right now is based on a Rashi we're going to see this week, in that parsha. Parsha Vayera, Rashi makes a comment that is bizarre. It says, on account of Avram Avinu, Lot is saved. Now, Rashi highlights an event that Lot did that was a very nice event, that was because of that he was saved. Says Rashi, Mauzchi Rasul Shal Avram al Lot. What is the connection of remembering Avram to do with Lot? Nizkar Shahaya Lot Yodea Shesara Ishto Shel Avram. Hashem, remember what that means. Remember, he of course knew it. That Lot knew all along that Sarah was Avram's wife, and yet when Avram claimed Vishama, and Lot heard Shama Avram Mitzrayim Al Sarah Achosi He, that Lot heard Avram say about his wife that she's really my sister, and Velo Gila Davar. He didn't tell. He didn't spill the beans. He didn't tell him the secret. And for that, Hashem over here remembers him and protects him and saves him. It was certainly nice what he did. He should get kudos for that. But he did a much bigger thing than that. Lot welcomed Malachim into the city. Remember the story? He brought them into his house. He risked his life. He was willing to give up his daughters that they should be raped even, and maybe even killed, but just don't touch my malachim. He was achlasis orachim to a fault. Wouldn't that be the reason why you should be saved? If I had to ask you, what was a bigger incident? Where was Lot's shining glory that he almost died to protect his orachim? Or that he one time he didn't say that Sarah was Abram's look. What would be the crowning glory? I would imagine it would have been the fact that he was machnis orach to an extent that no one could even imagine possible. Rashi doesn't say that at all. Rashi said Lot's greatness was that he didn't reveal Avram's secret. What's the shot with it? So he didn't reveal Avram's secret. What's that?
They would have killed him.
Okay. But his action was that he was quiet. He was quiet.
Maybe they would have paid him a lot of money.
Abraham would have protected Avram, but yes, that's my guess. But you're right. It could have been dangerous for Avram. You're absolutely right. And the results may have been greater, but the action itself was not as great. Either the results, the outcome was greater. You're probably right. But the action, he should get a little shout out for what he did for the Malachim, I assume. It should be something that should be high on the list.
Maybe he knew, though, that Malachim
would have died. Okay, so we'll get back to one second. Take a different shot, a little bit. Different shot.
Trying would have paid him a lot of money, and that was his biggest
HR. Oh, okay, good. So you're saying that, same thing we said earlier, a little bit like the idea of monetary, he avoided his monetary HR. Okay, maybe. But I saw a shot in the Ali Shore, which is Sefer Shlomo Volbi, in the Chelik Beis, in the page 538. If you want to look it up, you can see yourself. Anyways, he quotes the following shot. It's a wild shot. He says that when you do things that either you learned by habit, or that you're naturally wired to do, you don't get much credit for them. And I repeat what I just said. When you do an action, if I do things now, today, because my family trained me to do so, or I mimicked someone doing it, or I'm naturally inclined to do those things, your level of reward is limited. Limited reward for that. Lot grew up watching Avraham Avinu, Ish Chesed. He was the king of Chesed. And therefore, it was only natural that it should wear off on him. That was natural. And when he does it, he doesn't get complete credit because it's not out of his character. However, to sit there and watch when Avraham Avinu lies, Lot never knew what to do in this case. He was able to figure out on his own, this is right to do. This is right to do. I'm going to do it. And he gets much more credit because he initiated, he was mechadesh, something that he went beyond that which he ever witnessed in his life. That's where his credit comes from. I saw, he quotes over there as well, about Cain and Hevel's story. We know when it comes to Cain and Hevel, Cain brought a korban, and says, V'Hevel gam hu. He also brought a korban. And who was listened to? Hevel was listened to. And Cain was ignored. And then Cain kills Hevel. So I saw, they asked, I understand, Ali sure brings this down. Why is it that Hevel's korban, he just was connecting to God? Why didn't God protect him? So it's because Hevel wasn't so l'shem shemayim. He was a gam hu. He followed. He mimicked someone else's activity. When you only are following somebody else and are looking to become an individual and strong in your own right, then your behavior and your reward will be limited. People grow up, oftentimes, they see a person, they say, that's who I want to be like. This is my plan for myself. This is my dream for myself. They see someone like that. By definition, when you're only trying to live up to someone else's expectations of what they have in their life, you're not going to be a superstar. Because you're cutting yourself short. I was speaking to someone recently, and it's not at all the point of this discussion. But I was speaking to someone recently, and I mentioned some of them in passing, and they said, well, but I'm not planning on doing that. I'm not planning on going Shabbat. I'm not planning on going Shabbat, let's say. That's what they said to me. I said, nothing to do with that. That's not the point. Don't sit there and imagine, this is my dream for myself. This is my goal for myself. I'm going to do only this. That's it, Dayenu. Why are you doing that? Well, I saw other people do that. That's what I enjoy doing. That's not serving God in its full extent. You get so much credit for behaving the way God trained you and wired you that is good for you to behave. The credit you get most is when something is out of the box for you. If you're a naturally angry person and you learn patience, you get a lot of credit for that. If you're a naturally patient person and you're patient, it's good. It's good. But that's how you're wired. That's not anything extra special. Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling you over here, the key to greatness, the reason why Lot was saved, because he went out of the box of how he should have been behaving. There was no reason not to tell. There was no reason not to. Even things that were pushing to tell, maybe. Like money and things like that. But Chesed, it was a no-brainer. How could you be born and live with Avraham Avinu on a regular basis and not have Chesed in your life? Of course you're full of Chesed then. We come with all these plans in our mind. We have our future mapped out for us. We have all of our career plans. And we know, I don't want to get past this point in time. I don't want to get too intense, too much into the learning, too much. I have already my goals and my borders set up. That's a flawed service of God. That's flawed. I'm not telling you what you should be doing, but I'm telling you, you should not wait and put a barrier. This up till now, icon, is how far I will go. My brother didn't do this. My father doesn't do that. Icon. That's the behavior of a person who does not get schus. You don't get rewarded entirely for what you do then. Because you're doing it out of habit and out of rote. If you want to know how to find favor in God's eyes, it's get outside the box. Don't worry what everyone else is doing around you. Who cares the way that you imagined you would be one day? That was when you were a kid. That's why it bugs me so much. You know, it's too late to talk about this right now. I'm so bugged by the idea of an early decision at college. It bothers me so much. It bothers me, as we spoke about this before, it bothers me because what you're doing is you're saying that I'm right now limiting my ability. I'm making it right now for what will happen in a year from now. Who knows what's happening a year from now? It could be for all you know. And it's much more an issue when you're in high school at the time. When you apply early decision, you haven't even experienced learning yet. You haven't experienced what it means to be a kaddish yet. To go to yeshiva and try learning it and be inspired by God. I promise you, you will spend most of your life in pursuit of money. I promise you that. You have the opportunity to spend a little bit of your time in pursuit of religious pursuits. You're a 50-50 person. You're part man, physical being with money desires, physical desires. You're part kaddish, you're part malach, you're part angel with need to be kaddish. You'll spend probably 98% of your time focusing on the financial burdens of getting more money. 2% if you're lucky on the religious time. It doesn't make any sense, especially in advance, to commit to a life when you can't give yourself more time. To become kaddish is a little bit it's a little bit not understandable to me, at least. To me. I'm only one person. That's my concern. I think it's time for us in general, at this point in our year, but even no matter what stage you're at in life, is that you shouldn't put a limitation, I will not do X, Y, or Z. I was speaking to someone the other day, and I was learning with John Gardner the other day, and he was telling me, I had a sefer called Michta Be'eliyahu, and there it says that in order to get close to God, sometimes you do things that are external, that are physical, that aren't even real. I start saying Baruch Hashem more often. Baruch Hashem, I do Baruch Hashem. Just because you have Hashem in your mind more when you say that. It's a little, it's not who you are, I'm not that firm yet, but it's still, it's a way you'll be able to, Baruch Hashem is a way to get God and mood of God in your mind a little bit easier. You should start doing that. And the person I was learning with said to me, that's not me, I don't do that thing, it's not me. Why? What makes that not you? How is that not you? You can't pronounce the words? Look, I never saw myself that way. That's where the problem arises. You're not in the business right now of limiting yourself by how you see yourself. You can look deep and have great goals and try to achieve them if they're going to help you push further. But to limit yourself, because I don't see myself going past that point in time, is a grave error. And that's what Lot was. He was a person who limited himself. His shining glory is not what he picked up from the Avos, from Abraham Avinu, because that was expected from him already. That's normal. But what he didn't do was something that was expected. When he kept his mouth shut, he didn't tell everyone what happened with Avram. He didn't tell even Paro to get Avram in danger. Who knows what could have happened, even though he got many gifts in return. That was his one activity where we say, Kol HaKavod Lot. We should be Zocher to have many activities that are outside the box. Activities that no one would have expected from us. Whether our families, whether our Kadosh Baruch Hu may wire us, but it requires you to be strong and to even do something that's outside of character. And I've told one time, I end with this, that a person one time said, a great Rebbe one time said, his hardest thing in the world is to change one midah of yourself. It's the hardest thing in the world is to work out something that you're naturally not inclined to be doing. Which would be zocha. I don't know if we can change all our midos. Most midos we have can be used for good or for bad. We can use them for good. It would be zocha to realize that I'm not trying to limit myself when I look up to role models of myself. I'm trying to limit myself. Rather, I'm trying to figure out ways to propel me further. It would be zocha to have a time together of learning from Lot's great deeds that he did, and learning also what not to do from the important mistakes that he made. Have a good Shabbos.